Blog Talk Radio.
You know that the ice cream scoop can make a child smile, and that by slowing us down, the traffic light can keep us going. You know that the lawnmower makes life easier, that the blood bank makes life possible. But did you know all these ideas came from the minds of African Americans? Support the United Negro College Fund, because a mind is a terrible thing to waste. Visit uncf.org or call 1-800-332-UNCF. Brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
I've been trying to figure out the best way to compose this letter to you. I wrote one draft and then trashed it because my friend Liat helped me realize that everything I had written was honest, but I was writing from a space of please like me rather than from a space of authenticity. What I finally discovered at the age of 28 is some people will like me and some people won't, and all I can do is be me and go from there. So here it goes. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys. I just read From A Princess Found by Sarah Culberson and Tracy Trivas, a wonderful book about a young lady finding out about her birth family. She was adopted and found out that she was a princess from Sierra Leone. Her name is Sarah Culberson, and she's on the line this morning. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for coming on this morning. I know you're on the West Coast. It's early. I also have a wonderful, talented, very handsome, creative, how many adjectives should I use with him, guest, Isaiah Washington. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Isaiah is also very connected with Sierra Leone through his genetic link, finding out about his heritage as well. They're both doing some wonderful work in Sierra Leone, and I wanted to highlight that this morning, so that's why I had them on. Also, I want to let you know that if you have any questions, you can call in this morning. The call-in number is 646-929-0368. Also, you can follow me on twitter.com/joykeys, and you can become a fan of the show. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. This morning, again, I have two wonderful guests, and many of you may not be aware of the strife that has been going on in Sierra Leone, children soldiers, amputation, burning of complete villages, towns, no discretion of who or what, people really fighting for resources. Just to let you know a little history, Sierra Leone is among one of the first places where slaves were taken back in 1652, and they were brought to the southern part of the United States, South Carolina and Georgia. But in 1787, the British helped 400 freed slaves from the United States, Nova Scotia, and Great Britain return to Sierra Leone to settle in what is now called Freetown. So there's a lot of history there. Unfortunately, there have been a lot of war and strife, and so that's why what Isaiah and Sarah are doing there is so wonderful. I want to start with you, Isaiah. Talk to us about this journey that you started with Sierra Leone.
Oh, no, if I may. You can't start with me first.
Oh, I have to start with the princess. Okay,
culturally,
no problem.
Culturally, that would be, you know, I'm changing the time, getting in a lot of trouble, particularly as the 60% Muslim there. So I got in a lot of trouble the last time I was in Sierra Leone because I actually wanted to give accolades to the women who were working in my village to build school, another school building. So I invited all the women to come up with the men, and it went over well only because I was there. But, you know, I make it a point to always make sure the women, all Sierra Leone women, will go before me, go at the forefront of the movement here. So if you bear with me, I would love Ms. Culberson to speak first.
Thank you.
Excellent, excellent. Well, Sarah, let's start with you. Again, I just want to mention your book, A Princess Found. There's a link to the book on this Blog Talk Radio. Also on Facebook, I put a link. People can learn more about the book. But let's start off with your journey. You were adopted by a white family. Talk to the audience about your story.
Yes, I was adopted when I was a baby into an all-white family in West Virginia. My mom and dad, Jim and Judy Culberson, and I had two older sisters who are about 10 and 11 years older than me, and this whole new family, and it was incredibly exciting, and growing up was fun in Morgantown, West Virginia, and I actually happen to be in Pittsburgh right now. I actually flew out here for a meeting, so I'm not
too far from
home.
Okay, okay.
And so I grew up in Morgantown, West Virginia, went to college there in West Virginia University, went on to get my master's at the American Conservatory Theater in acting, then moved to Los Angeles. And in 2004, I chose to find my birth family. I did this class for my acting career called Landmark Education, and I thought, oh, I'm going to have a breakthrough in my acting career. And when I went, there was something even bigger that opened up for me, and it was, I realized I was afraid to find my birth family. I thought, well, they might not want to meet me, they might not want to talk to me, and I just thought that I didn't really care because I have this wonderful family, my mom and dad and sisters and extended family, but what I realized is in this class that I was really afraid, and I realized that I wanted to step through that fear because I had all these questions. I wanted to know who I look like, and everything, because I knew that my birth mother was a white American, my birth father was Sierra Leonean, and they met in the 70s in West Virginia. My father came over to study, his brother brought him over. He met my mother, and then they had me unexpectedly. And I just had all these questions. I found out that my birth mother had passed away of cancer when I would have been about 11. And then I thought to my, and I met some of her family, and they were incredible and loving. We still see each other when we can on certain holidays. And my birth father was a different story because I didn't know where he was, and I didn't know where to begin to find him. And in my heart, I knew he was still alive. I thought, he's probably in Sierra Leone, but how do we do this? So I found a private investigator through a friend who found my father. I wrote a letter. The letter that you read at the beginning of the call was a letter I wrote to my father. And it's funny, when you said my friend Liat, I thought, oh my gosh, does she have a friend Liat too? And then I realized, I'm embarrassed now, but I realized that, oh, she's reading that letter. She's reading
from
the book.
I was reading from your letter, yes.
I was like, okay, this is great. And I wrote a letter to Maryland, which is where they said my birth father was, and I got a phone call 4 days later, and I'll never forget that moment. I was in Los Angeles. I picked up the phone, and my aunt was this woman was on the other line, and she said, "Hello, Sarah. This is Evelyn. How are you?" And I thought, is this that Jamaican woman I met the other day? Because I didn't expect to hear from anyone so quickly. And she said, "I'm your auntie. We received your letter." And I started to bawl. I said, thank you.
I started to cry. Sarah, can I tell you, I started to cry during those sections of your book, you know, just well up, because it was so much joy. I was so happy that it had turned out wonderful for you, because, you know, you had mentioned earlier in your book how, you know, other people you knew had gotten adopted and they were rejected, and that was one of your biggest fears. And I think that's the fear of any person looking for their family, you know, who doesn't know them, they might be rejected. But when you got so much love, I mean, and then all the calls coming in from all over the country, from your different relatives, I mean, I just was so happy for you, and tears welled up in my eyes. I just thought it was beautiful. And then when you spoke with your father, talk to the audience about what happened when you actually spoke to your father.
The first thing he said to me is, he said, "Please forgive me." He said, "I didn't know how to find you after you'd been put up for adoption. Your name had changed. Everything had changed." And I said, "No, no, no, wait a second. Please forgive me, because I've been making you wrong my entire life just to protect myself, and I'm not going to do that anymore." And he said, "Okay." And I said, I'd love to meet you. How do we do this?" And he said, "Well, it's challenging after the war to come to the United States to get a visa. Can you come here? And it's been peaceful for 2 years. And I said, "Of course." And I went there, and we traveled on the bumpy roads to Bumpe. I call them the Indiana Jones roads, which are now being which is wonderful. The roads are looking so much better. I just got back in January, and it's really exciting.
Great.
But when I got there, there were about, I don't even know, I lost count, but like 200 to 300, 400 people singing and dancing. When I arrived in my family's village, my father gave me a green African dress, and he had a matching green shirt. And when I arrived, everyone parted, and all the women of the village came forward wearing the same green dress, singing, "We're preparing for Sarah." And
wow.
I was literally pinching myself, because I didn't believe this was really happening.
Like you were dreaming. Yeah.
I felt like I was dreaming. Yeah.
Yes. I want to bring Isaiah on the line. He's been very patient and gracious, allowing the princess to speak first.
Thank you, sir.
So Isaiah, talk to us about your homecoming.
Well, it's pretty much mirrors the experience that Sarah spoke of. Actually, I can hear and almost smell the smell that she's very well aware of the Sierra Leone soil and the villages and the people, and how that if I could have a doorbell in my home here that would resonate to 300, 400 villagers every time you return to the village. I know every time I've returned, that's the reception. That's how they do it.
Mm-hmm.
They line up all the children, and it's a big party. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's something that I don't ever personally want to get used to. But it's probably the most profound feeling ever. And I thought it would just happen one time. When I was inducted as a chief, I thought, oh, they're bringing this guy in. The villagers don't know if I'm a celebrity or not. I'm not thinking that, I'm going to help them out and this, that, and the other. But
right.
It turned out to be something much more profound than I wanted to accept at the time. I sort of have known it through a dream since I was 9, which I talk about in my offer in the form of a book. The title is called A Man from Another Land, but that's not my title. The actual Inyande Manga, the woman, the mother who gave me my name, Gondebe. Gondebe is a Mende name that had not been used since, maybe the 18th century. And apparently the folklore goes that there would be a man from another land that would be born. Come back and help make things right in Sierra Leone.
Wow,
that's
beautiful, very beautiful.
Yeah, but it's daunting because when you show up, I forgot about the dream that has been altering my life, all my inclinations. When I thought I was going to be a football player, this dream would come back in black and white and color. And something.
It was haunting you. It was haunting you. Yeah.
Well, I don't want to use the word haunting. It's pretty much like piggybacking on what Daryl was saying. It's a feeling, and it goes as deep as our chromosomes, I think, and particularly in the 21st century. If we all can agree to say that this deoxyribonucleic acid is the basis of all living organisms and some viruses, then that means that every living thing on this planet starts from DNA.
Mm.
I haven't said
so we're
that,
all connected.
I believe, without a question, for millions and millions of years. But in addition to that, there is, we all know, we can back this up on CNN, is that in the 21st century, there's a lot of change happening. And I always, when I do my speaking engagements, trying to get people to understand my dream, which I call the rerun in my book, that seems like every time I want to do something, this dream will show up to put me back on track. We can call it a dream, we can call it serendipity or fortuitous or ironic, but hopefully when my offering comes out on the book stand, people can remove those words, fortuitous and ironic and serendipitous, because they don't exist, only destiny exists. Sarah was born to do what she is doing. I also use Sarah a lot as an example on how I feel the African diaspora and our African American community are all Sarah Culberson. I always say that the animus, particularly in a African American man, or the anger or the feeling of displacement, comes from the fact that I had this theory that I think most of us, and I'm only to be a man, can speak from a man's point of view, is that we feel like we're displaced or not good enough or not worthy. It's because we don't have a connection to our birth mother and our birth father, which is the continent. So I always take it
the continent of Africa.
Metaphorically, a different way, a different level, is that many of us grow up without fathers. I grew up without my biological father. So there's a lot of issues sociologically that we can talk about, but that's another conversation.
That's a whole other story.
Yeah, but ultimately what I've been able to just use as an analogy is that what if all of Mother Africa's children woke up and asked the question, who is my mother, if you don't know, or who is my birthright father, and seek that individual out? Well, you will find, you know, you will become either a prince or a princess found. Apparently, Gandhi.
I think it will make people whole. Isaiah, I just want to let. I think that will make people whole, and I think a lot of people are walking around broken, and we have chips and scars, and we try to hide. Like Sarah in her book was discussing about her hair and how she looked, and all these things that we try to hide behind, and then eventually she was able to get rid of all those external things that really didn't show who she truly was, you know. So I think becoming whole is so important for humans, no matter who you are. Let me just mention the foundation that you guys both, for Isaiah Washington, the website, Gandabe Manga Foundation, .org, you can go there and learn more about that. And then for Sarah, she has bumpefund.org, bumpefund.org. And that is also on my website here on Blog Talk Radio and also on Facebook, so you can learn more about both the organizations and what they're doing. Make donations. Many things are needed. On Sarah's website, she has current projects and future projects and things that they need help with. There's a link right there about how you can help and how you can contact. For Isaiah Washington's foundation, many news. Just recently, Isaiah, talk to us about the Leon Sullivan collaboration.
Well, again, I reached out to the woman, Energy, the woman's voice, and obviously the legacy of her father was the inspiration behind me seeking my citizenship. I've been studying for a long time since I was at Howard in 1987, trying to figure out how I can become a person of purpose that could challenge stereotypes, being a dark-skinned African-American man, treated a certain way on the campus of Howard University. I talk about that. And I decided to become an actor to actually, knowing that I'm a Pan-Africanist, but I said, you know, the first step, the first phase of me trying to offer this change in my purpose, it's not really clear how I'm going to do it, is I want to make the world fall in love with a dark-skinned man.
Well, I think that works, because I want to let you know, when I let some people know that you were going to be on the show, they want to shower you with their love. I just want to tell you, as many fans out there, they were like, please tell him we said hi. I said, well, he's married. Back up. Just don't start, you know.
Well,
but they
really
do love your talent. You're a very talented actor, and they're very happy to see your activism in motion. They're very happy about that.
Well, it starts. That's what I'm saying. I'll be 48. Thank God. I never thought I'd get past 25, but I'll be 48 this August. So I have to preface it, because a lot of people forget. You know, I'm now that generation where, people, what is he talking about, dark skin, light skin? That's so passe, that's so old. And I'm glad it is, and I'm working hard to do that. And I'm not trying to remind anyone of scars and wounds of how we have interracial, inter-community racism and bigotry in our own community, the African-American community, but it is real. And unfortunately, some people still play upon those old ideas to give themselves value. But my point is that at the time, in the 70s, when I grew up, to be my hue, was not a good thing. To have the grade of hair that I have was not a good thing. And I was challenged.
The paper bag test.
That happened to me. I talk about that. It happened to me as when I was considering joining fraternity. I was requested to take a paper bag test. And so, but all I'm saying is, when I looked at all of that, It pissed me off or hurt then at the time, but I began to say, well, let me become more proactive, because I was busy marching against apartheid at the time, right? People waiting in the email to get their first American Express card. And I had already been married and divorced, already been in the military by the time at 23. I always said that I had a midlife crisis at 23, because I'd already lived so much when I tried to go back to school and become an actor to start making these changes.
You've been an activist. It's not something new. People might think, oh, he just jumped on this bandwagon, but you've been working on this path
of becoming whole, being an activist for the community, for the Pan-African, for quite a long time, for most of your life. So I think that's an important note to make for the audience to realize it's not, this is not some new fangled thing that, you know, you just picked up out of nowhere. You know?
Yeah, I've heard that silly season perception, but that's because people don't know I'm there. I mean, And I said to speak in third person, but if people knew me, and this is how I go back to my friend Atala Shabazz or Ilyasi Shabazz, those who are of us who are Pan-African, they know me, and they know me first through spirit, not through name, because Isaiah Washington is not my real name anyway. But having said that, the perception is what it is. I don't know, you know, I know how I got there, but before my superstar, so to speak, on this TV show, I've always been this person. And like I said before, I think the book will really clarify deeply and how I have been thinking about Africa since I was 9. And it wasn't my choice. It was coming through me.
Your book, Isaiah, let me just tell the audience, your book is going to be coming out in April of this year, yeah?
April 27th, which is also...
April 27th.
Independence in Sierra Leone.
Yeah.
Right?
That happened, you know... I thought the book was going to come out this June. I wanted it to come out this June. But again, how there's no irony in this world and how Africa is really calling all of us to do this service, the publishers decided on that date, unbeknownst to me.
Wow.
That's amazing.
I didn't even have a conversation about it. So it just, again, this thing people want to call a movement, this thing, this princess is found and prince and kings being found.
It's been pulling you.
Well, it's just time. What I'm saying, it's just time. What is happening in Egypt, in Tunisia, in Libya, it's just time. It's time for those who are aware to no longer be academic about what we're doing or what we say we want to do about Africa, but
be
actually
proactive.
Engage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we have all the tools. We have the internet.
Isaiah, I just want to bring Sarah, and we only have a couple minutes left. Sarah, talk to the audience about what you need to help with your foundation, some things that people can do immediately.
One of the things that we're working on, I just took 8 high school students there from the Oakwood School to meet the Boumpe High School students, and one of the things that we saw was the need to empower the teachers. We're in a rural area. It's $80 a month to pay a teacher at this school. It's a boarding school, and that is a huge, like on a scale that people can do, a reoccurring donation or get a couple friends together or whatever they want to do, $80 a month for teachers. Because what we realized is if you can do all you can for the students, but if the teachers aren't empowered, it doesn't matter because we're working on finishing this school and keeping the teachers empowered. And some of them don't get paid by the government. Not that the government's doing anything wrong. It's just the government's very busy with a lot of other things. So we want to keep the schools going. So that's a one way that people can help.
So $80
donate.
A month.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever
works
for people.
Isaiah, what are some things people can do to help you out with your foundation?
Just spread the word. I've been for years using it. I've been blessed enough to use my own resources. I am opening up to other donorships and sponsors. A lot of people that go to the website donate anywhere from $50 to $100. Every penny counts, and I use it. I go to my website. The thing that I try to make clear is that you have to see where your money is going. So when you go to TGMF projects, the Garden of Imanga Foundation projects, hit on recent events, you can actually see the before and the after. In the photo gallery, I believe that most NGOs and nonprofits don't show people where their money is going. So I believe that a photograph is worth 1,000 words. So I work very hard to make sure that when I'm using my capital or some sponsor or some donor or collaboration with the Leon A. Felon Foundation, which just sent medical supplies to Bo Hospital, which really needs it, and some other hospitals in Machu Jong villages, it's really about spreading the word. But of course, obviously, Sarah knows funding is always is key. You can never have enough funding.
Right.
But spreading the word also helps too, to let people know that during this economic times, that just spreading the word and just letting people know that Sarah and I exist and what we're doing, that's just as valuable as donating money if you don't have it as well.
Right.
I want to thank both of you so much. We've run out of time, but I want to thank both of you so much for coming on. I think I should say Bise. Is that thank you?
Oh, Bise.
I'm sorry.
Bise.
Okay.
All right. Isaiah, that was me trying to speak to you in Mende, but
I you did. That was great. Thank you.
Monsieur?
Monsieur? You say thank you in Mende.
Okay, well, you're going to say thank you in Creole. Thank you is fine.
Thank you. Okay. All right. Well, you guys have a wonderful Saturday. I have both your websites on my page and on the fan page on Facebook. I want to really encourage everyone to reach out to Isaiah and also to Sarah and help them out in this path, which may also help you become whole in your discovery of yourself. Thank you so much, Isaiah. Thank you, Sarah, for coming on today.
Thank you for having us.
All right, Sarah.
You guys have a wonderful Saturday. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Ciao.
Bye. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I just had Isaiah Washington on the show, Sarah Carbelson. Both of them are working arduously to improve the conditions in Sierra Leone, education, medical supplies, housing, all types of things. Please check out their websites, GondabeyMangaFoundation.org. And for Sarah, it's BumpyFund.org. You can find both those links on Blog Talk Radio here on my page and also on the fan page on Facebook. You can follow me on twitter.com/JoyKeys, and you can become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I'm going to be speaking with a wonderful singer from Netherlands, Stefan Morrison, in a couple of minutes, so please stay tuned. If you have any questions, you can call in at 646-929-0368. I think I have a caller with a question here. Good morning. You're calling from 202 area code. Do you have a question?
No, I just wanted to say congratulations on your work. The shows are really dynamic and inspiring, and I hope a lot more people will be able to tune in and learn a lot from what your interviews are presenting. So
it's more than just
one-dimensional. You have the stars, and then you have people who are doing good work in the charity side. So I think it's really important because it's a unique offering. It's not just flash, but it's a lot of good, solid information. So the listeners appreciate that.
Well, thank you so much for listening. I want to thank all of you for listening to the show and supporting. We're past 55,000 downloads of the show, so that was all done by you guys, spreading the word to friends and family and so on. So stay tuned. Stefan Morrison, live from the Netherlands. 646-929-0368 will be the call-in number. I hope you can stay tuned for that. Have a wonderful Saturday, and if I don't hear from you, have a wonderful week.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
I don't know how to talk like a parent. Don't make me come back there. You see what I mean? It's pretty awful. Try it again. Don't make me come back there. Now, that's pretty good. That one kind of sounded like my dad. Weird.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to put up with you. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.